Matters. This discussion of NAMI Racine County's program on teen mental health is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. So please go to our Facebook page and find out more information. And thank you so much, Michelle and Nicole.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This show originally aired July 18th, 2020.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters. Our topic today is staying emotionally and mentally healthy, plus we'll have an update on COVID-19 in Walworth County. My guests for part one of the program are Lisa Hain, Associate Director of Kenosha Human Development Services, and Angela Martin, Director of Clinical Services at Kenosha Human Development Services, also known as KHDS, or KIDS. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Len.
Good morning, Len. Thank you so much for having us today.
My pleasure. Angela, as a clinical director of KHDS, please give us an overview of why this topic, staying emotionally and mentally healthy, is important. Why is it always important? And why is it especially important to remember to care for ourselves now with the multiple stresses we're coping with? And what is the role in giving help of the Kenosha Human Development Services and like organizations that exist throughout our broadcast area? Angela, why don't you give us that broad 90,000-foot overview, please?
Sure. That's a really great question, Len. Mental and emotional health, they have a huge impact on our relationships with people, right? And it has a really big impact on our ability to make good decisions and how we can cope with stressors. You know, everyone has stress in their lives, and when the it's really important to try to maintain equilibrium and balance so that when we have a lot of stressors in our life, we can manage to bounce back from setbacks. Okay. Many of us have coping strategies to try to manage this equilibrium and try to stay okay, but stresses can compound. And they can kind of build up on us. And I think that's something that a lot of us are experiencing right now. There are many things that cause anxiety and stress in our daily lives. And when we have something like a global pandemic, right, of a virus that's really beyond our control, that can start adding stress. And that can also cause financial problems. It can cause relationship issues. It can cause a lot of fear and anxiety. And then when we add civil unrest out in the world, and when it brings it home to our community, those things can really pile up. So when we're in crisis, we can be overwhelmed with too many things, and our coping strategies sometimes aren't enough. We all have both positive and negative coping strategies. Some of the positive ones can be maybe going to the gym or walking the dog or doing yoga, maybe doing art, going to classes, spending time with friends. Negative coping strategies can be overeating or drinking or overshopping, using drugs, isolating. Those things can turn into problems when our positive strategies aren't available. And one of the things that's been really difficult during COVID is that a lot of our positive coping strategies aren't available to us. So it's a real challenge to adjust our positive strategies to meet our needs or find ways to create new positive coping strategies.
Thank you. That's really, really helpful. And once again, in the broadest possible way, how does Kenosha Human Development Services and like a human development service community-based organizations in our whole listening area, how do these kinds of organizations and yours help?
Well, I'm going to ask Lisa to chime in on that because she really does a great job of participating in a lot of community meetings and things, and she's pretty aware of different services. Lisa?
Yeah, so there are many organizations in Kenosha that offer specialized services that fulfill specific needs in our community. So sometimes people need some short-term help to get through tough times, sometimes a little bit longer of help. Kids and other agencies, we offer a wide variety of helping services. And just to name a few organizations that are out there, Women and Children's Horizons, they help people in domestic violence situations. The Shalom Center help people who are experiencing homelessness in our community. There are many agencies out there that do outpatient therapy with individuals and families to help learn better coping strategies, deal with stress, anxiety, depression. The Hope Council offers education and support to people challenged with addiction. Kids, we here in-house offer crisis intervention prevention services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to juveniles, families, adults. We have information and referral through our Mental Health and Substance Abuse Resource Center. We have a VOCA program. That's our Victim of Crimes Act program. We have therapy through that program, as well as case management and outreach to help people who are victims of crimes. We also have our TAPS program, which is Therapy Addressing Pandemic Stress. Angela, did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can fill in a little bit about the TAPS program. So in Kenosha, Kenosha County received some funding to really enhance mental health services for people who are dealing with pandemic stress. And so this program is specially designed. It's at no cost to people who can participate in it. And it's specifically designed for two groups of people. The first is people who are caregivers. So anyone who works in a caregiving situation, maybe a CNA or a doctor, a first responder, or even provides care for someone in their personal life, like if they have an elderly parent, or even parents who are caregivers for children that are impacted by COVID stress. And then also people with serious and persistent mental illness or addiction. So this program offers an assessment and 8 free sessions of short-term solution-focused therapy to help them learn better coping strategies to deal with pandemic stress.
Thank you.
It's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. Most of these programs are also available in Racine and Walworth and other counties. I want to just speak a little bit because Lisa listed a lot of the services in Kenosha, but Racine also has HALO. They have the Women's Resource Center. And if you call the Human Services Department in any of, you know, the counties that you live in, they usually have an information and referral system where they can meet with you over the phone. A lot of places are still doing walk-ins. Like, we take walk-ins in our office. If anybody stops by and they need to find out what resources are available, you can still do walk-ins right now here. Or people will call you back and help connect you with services that are needed. So I think one of the things I'm really proud of in Kenosha and in Southeast Wisconsin is that we have really robust human services, and there's a lot of things that we can offer people.
Kenosha has led under the leadership of Janine Fields and her predecessors, has really led the way regionally in this area. And I'm proud to say I'm from Kenosha because of that. I wonder if we could drill down now, get a little bit into the details. The COVID-19 pandemic, the civil unrest, people are on edge. I think the political situation doesn't help. Are there differential things that you look at? And are there, as you assess yourself or assess a family member within your own home or family unit or extended family, are there different kinds of impacts on the general population as opposed to youngsters, children, teens, young adults? What about those who have already been impacted by adverse childhood events, called ACEs often for shorthand, adverse childhood events? People that get traumatized that way by domestic abuse, by being in a war, multiple of other possible circumstances. And I wonder if that's an especially vulnerable group and that you're focusing on, and how people should get into some kind of a treatment or helping situation. And what about the impact on parenting and on parents? I wonder if you could just differentiate a little bit amongst the segments of our population and what people should watch for and how people might think about this as being a normal response to stress, and that that seeking help is not an admission of weakness or a character flaw, but just as sensible as bandaging a cut finger. Which of you ladies would like to go first?
Sure, Len. This is Angela, and I'm going to kind of start with this issue. Because, you know, it's a real deep clinical look into things, right? And I think what you're asking for is, it's a complex question and there are complex answers to it. So one of the things I want to start by talking with, and I think Lisa also can chime in if, you know, if she can enhance the discussion as well. But there's a big difference to me between the pandemic and the civil unrest, because the pandemic is a long, slow stressor, right? Which has peaks, and it definitely has peaks. It started off, I think people were very afraid at first, and then we've kind of settled into this lower grade of fear with different things that come up that can really exacerbate for short term. Like, for example, if we're afraid we've been exposed and we have to quarantine, that can cause a peak in stress, right? If we have a family member who maybe has COVID or isn't feeling well, even allergies, right? I get allergies sometimes, and I would say on a monthly basis over the past 3 months, I've probably felt at least two or three times a month, I'm pretty sure I have COVID, you know? And so I worry about it because maybe I'm having trouble breathing or my body doesn't feel very good. And in the past, I would say, oh, it's my allergies. It's nothing to worry about. But now I'm much more concerned that I might have COVID. So I might take my temperature 10, 15 times, you know, and worry about those things. But then we also accommodate and get used to that, and then we kind of move on. And although our stress level is higher, we start to get used to that and we're accustomed to it. And now I know, like, okay, I worry about COVID when I don't have it. Or maybe we have a friend or a family member who has had COVID. That can definitely peak our stress. We can worry that someone may get sick and die, or we can worry that we're going to give it to someone else. So those are all things that can really cause peaks in our stress. I think the civil unrest is a little different because that was much more intense, and it was, although it lasted quite a while, it lasted more than one day, and it's still kind of brewing and in the backs of our minds. Not everybody who is listening to this lives in the inner part of Kenosha where the civil unrest really was very intense, but a lot of our agency programming and a lot of our consumers and patients that we work with live right in the area where the fires were and where the shootings happened. And so there was a lot of very intense trauma that we're still working through. And so that was very different than the pandemic, because I feel like the pandemic is always there, but the fires, the shootings, that was like a very intense traumatic burst of things. And so it's having a long-term impact on people, but it's also kind of dying down now. But that means that we're going to be more likely to be triggered by things again that come up, right? Even sirens, hearing a helicopter now can cause people to be afraid that maybe things are happening again. And there's a lot of intense fear and stress around the civil unrest. And it causes kind of rifts in relationships too, because there's a lot of, like you said, the political situation is kind of tied into it as well. So there are friends and consumers and clients who feel like they might be targeted because they're Black, they might be targeted, you know, they don't feel safe going outside of their homes. And there are people who are afraid that they might be targeted because they're white. So it's also a very racialized kind of stress. And it's something that you feel you don't have a lot of control over. And it causes disagreement in families too, and among friend groups. And that can increase people's sense of isolation and their sense of feeling disconnected, you know. So I think there are different things that impact it, but it all kind of compounds and causes like a complex type of trauma. So you asked me about different groups too. I want to make sure that I talk about that, Len. We talked about the differences between children and teens and young adults. Loneliness is a big issue for kids in these pandemic times. They miss socializing with their friends, the normal family events that we're used to, like, you know, family reunions, weddings, even funerals are very different and they're very truncated and short and small, or they're not happening at all. So those times that we have to feel connected and feel a sense of belonging with other people, we're missing out on those things, right? We don't have those opportunities. And our rituals for them are very different. You know, drive-by birthdays, that's kind of, you know, I always wonder, is that even really fun, you know? But I think parents are trying really hard to normalize and try to give kids a chance to feel that they're appreciated and loved and create opportunities for them to feel special, right? And I think it's really hard to, you know, when someone passes away, our normal rituals that comfort us are just not the same anymore. And it can really cause people to have extra grief and feel a lack of closure. So connecting on video is not the same as face-to-face. I think connecting on video gives us opportunities to feel connected. I know I've scheduled Zoom meetings or Skype or FaceTime with my sisters and my nieces and nephews. And every time we do it, we say, oh, that was so good. I'm so glad we did that. But also, it's not the same. It's not enough, you know, so we still feel like we're missing those things.
Well, that's very helpful to differentiate and to name the kinds of stress, because I think that feeling better about yourself and seeking help really begins with that, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
What about your staff? I want to go into now what services you're going to provide to help me with all this stress. But I'm wondering, how's things going there? How are you two doing? And how's your staff doing? Because they must be under tremendous stress, too.
Lisa, would you like to start with that question?
Yeah, absolutely. I think with the pandemic, I think what I'm hearing now is it's becoming more normalized. People are more accustomed to it. I think there's still stress involved in it. I think isolation is a big factor with many of our consumers that we serve. Our staff has done an amazing job of working with people. They didn't miss a beat through this whole thing, still providing really good quality services, making sure people were feeling safe, had access to resources, and getting their needs met. And so I think we're becoming more accustomed to doing different work. I mean, it is very different. We've modified how we've worked with people. We were very fortunate in the beginning to have an amazing IT department that helped us to be able to work from home, so we could do rotating schedules. So we were adhering to the COVID-19 protocols. We're still on those modified schedules. So we're not all in the office at once. And I just feel very grateful and thankful that we've been able to continue to provide those quality services to people in the community that are working with our programs.
Now let's get into what the services are that people can access that you provide, and how you would start, whether it's your agency or another agency. I'm feeling stressed out, or a family member is in disarray and is showing symptomology of extreme stress, or maybe just a level of continuing stress that you feel needs to be dealt with, and they want help. How does that happen? What do I do to get help? What do I tell you? And then what kinds of help can you provide? And you might mention that you've moved your main office, and if that has an impact, maybe we should tell people you've moved your main office to behind the Kenosha Unified School District Administration Building over right off 52nd Street.
Yes, that is correct. So we're at 3536 52nd Avenue.
Street.
And, or 52nd Street. Thanks, Angela. And we have people coming. We had people coming to that location prior to our move there. So people were aware that we were moving. They're walking in and they're finding us. And so I think we did a really good job of getting the word out. We're open for business, like Angela mentioned earlier. We are still, you know, we respond to crisis in the community 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Anybody can call us at 657-7188 to access those crisis services. We have a variety of programs to help people in the community who are experiencing homelessness. We have a projects for the assistance in the transition from homelessness, our PATH project, which provides outreach to people who are living on the streets and also living with severe and persistent mental illness. We have an outreach worker that goes into the community and helps connect people to mental health services that aren't already connected and helps them find a place to live.
We're talking this morning with the Kenosha Human Development Services top staff. We're talking with Angela Martin, Director of Clinical Services at Kenosha Human Development Services. And we're talking with Lisa Hain, Associate Director of Kenosha Human Development Services. And we're talking about how we're dealing with stress during these troubling times. Lisa, please continue with how we access services and the kinds of services you provide, and continue with providing that detail for our listeners, please.
Sure. We also have our Mental Health and Substance Abuse Resource Center, where people can come to our office, walk in, or call and make an appointment to access information and referrals to other organizations that help in the community. We have Bridges Community Center, which is a peer-run organization that helps. They provide support groups. They help people who are living with mental illness and addictions. We have a wide variety of support groups. They are also open and running those groups. We have an IVDU program that offers individual and group support to people with opioid and other drug addictions. We have peer support services for people who have overdosed or are at risk of overdosing. They help people get into and stay in recovery. We have our longer-term community mental health programs that provide case management to people living with mental illness, our community support program, and comprehensive community services programs. We serve about 400 people in those programs. We have Sunrise Clinical Services, which is our own behavioral health clinic that is open to the public for anyone seeking psychiatric services. So that's kind of an overview of the services that we offer people that are looking for emotional and mental health support.
What does it cost for someone to call and asks for your help and to get that help? Is there a charge? How does that work?
There is not a charge. These are free services.
Well, I will say that Sunrise Clinical Services is a regular outpatient mental health clinic. So those services, the psychiatric services, go through in people's insurance. One of the things that makes us different is we do take Medicaid, we take Medicare. We're in many insurances. So we're what we call a low barrier clinic. So people who struggle to get into other services because maybe they're on state insurance and other places limit how much state insurance they can take, we're dedicated to making sure that we provide care for those folks.
So if you or people you know or people in your faith community or in your family need help and need to access help, they should pick up that number. They should call you at your main number, which is what? What's that main number again?
That's 262-764-8555.
Okay, 262-764-8555, and they will get connected, and they shouldn't worry about money. They should worry about getting connected and picking up the phone and getting in touch, or put it for themselves or people they know. And why don't you go a little bit more into detail about crisis services? You have a crisis center now. It's in what used to be the old United Way building when I was the executive director of the United Way many decades ago. And it has had many uses since, but now it's very available. And come on, tell us about that. What goes on there, and how you access crisis services. You have a 24/7 number, don't you? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, Len. That's a really great question. I'll field this one. So we do have a crisis prevention center, which is separate from our main office, and it's at 1212 60th Street. So in that building, we have both, we have what we call juvenile crisis and adult crisis. We have one phone number for those services. So that number is 262-657-7188. And anyone can call if they have questions about mental health issues. We'll do our best to answer them. If they are feeling like they want to talk to someone, or they're having a crisis, or they think they want to access services anytime, 24/7. If they're concerned about a friend or a family member and they want to see what kind of resources are available in the community. And we also, sometimes we get calls from people out of our county, and we can also maybe connect them with a local phone number that they can call to access local resources. We do our best to try to make sure that people get connected. So if someone's in Racine, we may give them the number for the Racine, you know, crisis resource, or even in Northern Illinois, because as you know, we're a border county with Illinois. So we do have quite a few people who cross, you know, who cross the state line, and Kenosha and Northern Illinois, we have quite a few contacts there. So we do sometimes refer to resources there, or try to help them get the right numbers if they're struggling to find them, for sure. And then we also have the care center in that building. The care center is a short-term crisis stabilization center for people who are having a mental health crisis, or they're interested in getting into recovery and they might need what we call social detox. They don't need to be hospitalized. It's a hospital diversion, so they get medically cleared before they come so that they're safe to be there. And then they can stay there for a few days to get connected with services. We have substance abuse professionals come in and meet with people. We also have psychiatric professionals who come in and meet with people if they need it. And they might get started on medication while they're there, or get started into recovery, so that we can also assign case managers, so when they go home, we do follow-up to help ensure that they get connected with services once they leave that program as well. And I want to talk a little bit about stigma, because Len, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, and we haven't really talked about it too much, but I want to talk about stigma, because I think people are afraid many times of being labeled when they're experiencing some emotional distress, right? When they're feeling overwhelmed, or they're having deep sadness, or they're feeling panic and scared, and they're afraid to ask for services because they're afraid of being labeled as crazy, right? We don't like to use the C word in our job, because we feel like, you know, we're all the same. You know, there's no difference between myself and anybody who's calling the crisis line, or anybody who's coming in for an appointment. We all have mental health that needs to be taken care of, right? And sometimes some of us have bigger struggles than others, and we don't really differentiate between someone who's having a crisis and someone who's managing their mental health okay. We want to make sure that we offer what is needed where people are at. There's a, you know, we talked a little bit about the differences in different types of people, different, you know, communities that struggle. And I think first responders have a lot of stress, you know, police, firefighters, there can be a lot of depression and anxiety in those communities. They have really hard jobs, and they're considered essential workers. And during a pandemic, you know, a lot of programs went virtual, right? We did a lot of phone contacts with people, but the police don't have that option, right? Firefighters don't have that option. They're not going to call and see if there's a crime being committed. They have to go in person. So I think there's been a lot of extra burden and stress put on first responders in dealing with that crisis of the pandemic. And then also, I think, the civil unrest. It's important to remember, too, that police and firefighters are not monolithic. They're members of our community, and they all have different life experiences, different family situations, different mental health abilities, too. And some police officers and firefighters really struggle with anxiety and depression. And sometimes there can be a stigma in asking for help with that because they don't want to be perceived as weak. And like all of us, right? None of us want to be perceived as weak. We all want to be seen as strong, competent, healthy people. And we want to make sure that everyone has access to resources. And I think as an agency, and I think a lot of mental health services, we don't differentiate, right, between us and anybody else. We all need to take care of ourselves, and we want to make sure that everybody has that opportunity to take care of themselves so that they can recover when times are bad and get back to feeling okay.
That's terrific and so helpful. And I must say that the access I've taken to mental health services earlier in my life on a couple of occasions were some of the most important steps I ever did for self-care and self-awareness and having a happy life. Now, we don't have a lot of time left in part one of the program, but I really want to mention that you do have a foster parents program. And this is a topic that I know is close to your heart. And I wonder if you just take a half a minute just to tell us that you have it and that it's easy to get involved and you do some great training. How do people get involved in foster parenting?
Yes, thank you so much. This is Angela. I will take this question because foster care is really close to my heart. We do have what we call specialized foster care. And what that means is we offer specialized training for foster parents. We use a model called the teaching family model. And what that means is that we take great people, people who have wonderful skills, and we actually kind of really enhance their ability to deal with some of the behaviors that foster kids can have. We do trauma-informed care in all of our programs. We're very aware of the impact of trauma on people's lives. And one of the things that I know is our foster kids have been exposed to a lot of really difficult circumstances. And oftentimes, when we ask them, what is the most traumatic thing? What's the hardest thing you've ever had to deal with? Many times what they say is being removed from my home is the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with. So just the fact that they're in foster care is a trauma. So anyone who's interested in foster care and being a foster parent, give us a call at 262-764-8555. And let the staff know. We will get back to you and share more information with you about that.
Lisa, I'm sure that the community can help you with resources besides the federal and the state contributions to your budget. Are you accepting checks from the general public to support your mission?
Yes, we are. Absolutely.
And we can do that online, can we?
Yes, you can make a
donation. We can donate online and we can write a check online and mail it to your new office address.
Yes.
Finally, to close out this portion of the program, Lisa, speaking for the future of your agency, what's your hope for the next year or two?
Well, my hope is that the people who are receiving services continue to do so and find them helpful, and that the people in the community that are struggling and that are not connected reach out and receive the services that they need to stay emotionally and mentally healthy. I hope that KIDS is able to increase programming to meet the growing needs of the community, and that together with our partner agencies, we continue to strengthen our services to help the citizens of Kenosha County who are in need of services lead emotionally and mentally healthy lives.
That's a great, great summary. Remember that the phone number is available to you. I have 764-8555 locally, and the 24-hour crisis intervention line is 262-657-7188. Well, that concludes part one of our discussion this morning. Thanks again to you, Lisa Hain, and as Associate Director of Kenosha Human Development Services, and to Angela Martin, Director of Clinical Services of Kenosha Human Development Services. Thank you both very much for your participation. Our guest for part two of the program this morning is Carlo Nevacosi, MSW, LCSW, and ICS. And he's here with us this morning in his role as Deputy Director of Health and Human Services for Walworth County. Good morning, Carlo.
Good morning, Len. Thank you for having me.
Carlo, could you please give us an update overview of the COVID-19 situation in Walworth County, sir?
Oh, certainly. It's a mixed bag. I mean, if people have been following the numbers, Walworth County's numbers don't look particularly good. We've had some pretty significant increases in confirmed cases. We've had outbreaks. I think certainly the university reconvening has complicated things, although the school is doing their best to contain things on campus. However, our numbers are high. And the other side of that, fortunately, when I said it was a mixed bag, the other side is that the public schools, many of which in Walworth County have opted for a face-to-face approach, are doing pretty well. And our hospital capacity still remains incredibly strong in terms of available beds and ventilator availability. I think I just checked this morning. I think we have 6 people in the hospital spread between our two major hospitals in Walworth County. So I guess a long way of saying we have a high level of COVID activity. Our resources seem to be holding out.
What accounts for the difference in performance with respect to the spread of the virus amongst the public schools and the Whitewater UW campus, Carlo?
My belief, and it's I think it's a well-informed belief. We've had lots of contact with our school administrators. That's just a group that's much easier to corral. It's a group they have a little more control over than a young adult population on a college campus. When a school, Elkhorn School District, for example, imposes a student and a staff mask mandate, they're able to achieve pretty good compliance and they have good parental support. There certainly are challenges keeping 6-year-olds physically distanced, but they're showing that it's possible. Our school districts are showing that it's possible, and they've been responsive, reacted quite quickly and appropriately in the few instances now where they've had students that have tested positive. So it's a good system. Those environments are a little easier to manage.
Let's take a little look at the major locations within Walworth County, Mr. Nevacosi. The Lake Geneva has been in the news a lot, and even nationally earlier in this summer, about the activity there and people coming in from Illinois. And we also have the no mask order issue rising again. Well, I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about Lake Geneva. Situation there.
Sure, I can. I'll start by talking about some of the newer data we've been able to pull together. We've relied up to this point on a lot of the data that the Department of Health Services has put together for us that tracks number of cases by census tract. We've worked with some of our own internal resources and have been able to whittle that down to municipal boundary. So we have a better idea really of what's going on in, say, the city of Lake Geneva, the entire city of Whitewater, the entire city of Delavan, and certainly Lake Geneva's case burden is among the highest in the county. I still don't think, though, that really reflects the amount of activity. We've struggled, I think I mentioned this in previous discussions, struggled to know really what happens across the border in Illinois when we know that lots of people come and visit Lake Geneva and then they leave, they go home. If they test positive, that data goes to their local health office, either in another county or in another state. So while Lake Geneva and Delavan have similar case burdens, they're both relatively high, not alarmingly high. I'm not sure if the data that we have really captures what's going on there. I can say that the restaurants that have had identified outbreaks have done a nice job remedying the situation. I think there's a big focus on employee and customer safety. Although there are lots of restaurants, really throughout the county who haven't been identified as having outbreak and still may not have adopted a lot of the practices that we've urged them to. So again, maybe back to my theme overall of it being a mixed bag. But certainly Lake Geneva, with the population and how it swells in the summer, this summer has been no exception. There are additional challenges and additional risks to the public in terms of contracting the virus.
Are the situations in other parts of the county, Elkhorn, Walworth, and Richmond, the same, or are they bubbling down at a lower rate?
we're seeing lower incidences, so fewer per 10,000, a lower rate of infection.
I wonder if you could put the virus situation in Walworth County, in York County, in perspective with respect to the surrounding counties in our signal area, Racine, Kenosha, and extreme northeastern Lake County. What's that regional picture look from your standpoint, Carlo?
I was looking at some of this data this morning, and maybe I wasn't surprised by what I found. DHS, the State Department of Health Services, offers some data on what they call case activity. And so activity factors in how many new cases a county has, kind of what that case rate per 100,000 residents is, and is that trajectory of cases increasing or decreasing. Every county in Wisconsin, with one exception, has been identified as an area of high activity. So that means that their cases per 100,000 are high, kind of above a state established threshold, and the trajectory is going up. The one exception I could find was Price County. So hats off to Price County for whatever they're doing to manage things. I think some of that probably is due to the more rural nature of that community. But Racine and Kenosha both have high rates of infection. We're a little different. We're more rural, and yet at the same time, it would appear that our infection rates per 100,000 are higher than those neighboring. There are a few ways to explain that. I think earlier on in the pandemic, we really offered a lot of public testing, and that earlier on in the pandemic kind of drove up our infection rates, the rates of confirmed positives. We just were offering all sorts of open testing opportunities for people that I'm not sure were available in other counties. So we had a lot of people being tested. I don't think that fully accounts for what's happening now. I think what you're seeing, at least in the past few weeks, is one of the driving factors certainly is the university coming back in session. But really, since Safer at Home expired, we've seen cases trend up in Walworth County, and it looks like just about everywhere else too.
We're recording this 48 hours before broadcast, by the way, listeners. So I suppose from what you're saying is that you expect that, is it reasonable to expect that the rate of infection is going to bubble along at about the rate it is and is trending up? We were on the list of New York Times states with increasing cases at this time when we made this recording.
I do think cases will continue to trend up. We still look at our hospital data and look at, do we have the capacity, one, to handle the people that are really sick, that high risk group, and two, does our public health office have the capacity to reach out to people within 24 hours of confirmation of a test? I mean, those things are really the most vital, and so far, so good, although certainly the influx in cases the past week has strained our resources. I think we'll continue to see cases rise. I'm happy to have seen that again, the hospital data, even during Safer at Home, we saw between 2 and 6 people in the hospital on any given day. Our cases are much higher now, and we continue to see between 2 and 6 hospitalized people in the county each day. That's encouraging. This is a tough go, though. I mean, the kids on campus, the students at the university, all the state universities really are not the people that are largely at high risk for this. They're going to get sick, and briefly, they're going to recover. We need to make sure that our resources are sufficient for those high risk folks that we have.
I wonder if you would share with us, what are you telling your friends and family to do to keep safe, Mr. Nevicosi?
I wish I had something new to share, but it's the same. It's the same message. Face coverings are really, they're helpful. They're not a panacea. They're not the only strategy. I think we've put them. Maybe the public views them as the most important strategy. They're not. I still think physical distancing and hand hygiene and staying home when sick are the hallmarks of a healthy community here. As we try to get through this, face masks are a piece of this. We urge people to continue to wear them. And even outside in places like Lake Geneva, when the downtown area isn't particularly well controlled, when there's hundreds of people walking on the street, even Governor Evers' order says that, you know, you don't need to wear a face covering outside. I think there are some exceptions to that when you still probably should. So back to that 6 feet. If you can maintain 6 feet outside, you're in good shape. If you can't, wear a face covering even outside.
And what's your outlook for a vaccine? When the vaccine is available, are you going to be first on your block to get it when it's available?
I won't be first on my block. No, we hear mixed reports about both the availability and the quality of a vaccine. I'm not sure that we, as a public health entity, have much information other than what the